you've been practicing a lot in Montana and the surrounding areas. What are some of the common accidents?
So, of course, trauma is a big one. So hit by cars, we've seen dogs that have fallen into the geysers.
Oh my gosh.
In Yellowstone.
Yeah.
A lot of other common things I see in this area. THC toxicity is one that I see commonly.
Oh, interesting.
And that's actually a really rewarding thing to treat, because people come through the door with this dog that's urinating and kind of neurologically abnormal.
Right.
And they're thinking, oh my God, my dog is dying. And when we can diagnose that it's THC ingestion, there's ways to manage it, and the dog's most of the time is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
But that's something we see commonly.
And those are the symptoms?
Yeah, so what we see with that is...
A little sleepy, wants to watch, like, The Simpsons?
Oh, you watched the video of Martha's dog. She thought it was having a seizure because it was doing this.
Like a head bombing.
Yes.
Yeah, they kind of get hyperreactive. So they're like really sedate. They've got the half eyelids. Their head starts to fall. And then if they get stimulated, they're like, whoa, what's happening?
Yes.
And then they're often urinating. And when they walk, they kind of stumble.
Yeah. It was drunk walking around the house doing a head bob. And I sent her a video. She sent me that video. And then I put it to music, like some reggae, and sent it back to her. Easy skanking. I put it. She was like, oh, thanks, Michelle. Now I know he's fine. It's fine.
Absolutely.
Welcome to Explore Big Sky with Hori Marmet, where we take you inside the stories that matter in Montana's Gallatin Valley. We are your hosts, Joe and Michelle Borden.
Offer this episode a tasty treat while checking its temperature rectally, because we are talking modern veterinary medicine with local vet Dr. Jenny Ladd.
I'm going to think twice before I let you serve me dessert, Miss.
That's a way easier sentence. You're like, my name is Joe, period.
Jenny was good enough to sit down on the floor of our living room and get covered in corgi fur while we chatted. If you ever wonder why it seems expensive to have a pet these days, or whether pet insurance is a scam, this one may be worth your time.
And tumbled tootsies in the dryer town.
I did not write a tongue twister for you.
You
it was
did.
A very straightforward sentence.
Tasty treat a while tasty checking treat? Its temperature. Come on. That totally sounds like
all
somebody.
The T's? That's what bothers you? All right.
And the F's before episode.
Jenny, we're lucky to have Jenny Ladd here. She does animal ER stuff all over the Western United States. So she knows a whole lot about our pets and how to care for them. And we had just tons of dumb questions, as usual.
Yes.
So she answered them all.
Yeah, and it's a cool new world, brave new world in veterinary medicine.
That's right.
They've got vets coming to your house. Sounds like a hippie commune for dogs sometimes.
She did a house call for us.
Yeah, she did a house call for us. But, like, you know, when she said that, like, you know, there's multiple types of animals sometimes in a room.
Oh, right. Yeah, the new VEG methodology is pretty crazy. I think you'll find it interesting. But this is a good episode for us. Michelle asks for a new, different type of pet every day. So this is right up our alley.
My favorite thing to do, the boys and I, and actually I haven't let them in on this. And Smith is 15 and Wallace is 11, but I will get them hyped up on an animal and then get them to ask Joe for it. I'm like, totally, you guys. Oh, we could totally have one of those. I was ask Dad.
You should ask Dad if we can have a wombat.
And he's like, no, we can't. And they're like, why? Mom said it was fine.
Because I'm not sure you can domesticate a mountain goat.
Hey, capybara is my latest.
We certainly don't have room for it.
You could put a little leash on them. Oh, they're so cute.
We also love the show All Creatures Great and Small.
We do.
About the veterinarian, Dr. James Harriet.
I have a low threshold for stressful TV shows, so you guys might want to...
Haven't checked that one out, it is chill.
Yeah, and it's super chill and happy and awesome, just like Call the Midwife.
Yeah.
But yeah, our dog sat in on this one, and you will see firsthand that Chuck has a licking problem.
If you watch the video, if you just listen to the audio, you're going to hear his claws on the floor the entire interview. We call him Tippy Tap around here for a reason.
Yeah.
They're long and loud.
Sweet short legs.
But before we get to Dr. Jenny, let's do this quick
and now,
ad read.
A word from our sponsors. Big Sky Resort Area Tax. Election season is approaching, and Big Sky has a special mail-in only election set for May 7th.
May 7th.
That is soon.
Yeah, keep it on your mind. To keep the community informed, BizRad, BSRAD is hosting a candidate panel at the Waypoint on April 23rd at 5 p.m. It's free and open to the public. You will have the opportunity to ask questions and meet all of these candidates.
But resort tax is awesome. We need it. The community of Big Sky needs
it.
It
does a lot of good things.
Yeah.
For the community.
Hey, you guys. Like, subscribe, rate, review, and drag a banner behind a small plane advertising our podcast. There has got to be a limit for how long those can be.
That was my question. Is there a limit to how long one of those plane banners
can be? I don't think so. We lived at the beach for a really long time.
It can go on as long as you want it to.
Why don't they go on forever? Like, and furthermore. Actually, maybe just a second plane. And furthermore,
you're limited by punctuation.
I think that you still owe me $12 from that one time when we got ice cream. And
semicolon.
You said, yeah.
All right. That's
henceforth, they're on.
There we go. All right. Let's get to the conversation with one, the only, our neighbor,
Jen Ladd.
Dr. Jenny Ladd. Here she is.
Like in the ER, we don't carry vaccines.
You travel a lot. You're strictly an emergency vet at this point, but you were formerly a normal veterinary doctor here in Bozeman. Tell me, and we are with our dogs right now. We're with Jenny Ladd, by the way. This is Dr. Jenny Ladd. She is a veterinarian, and we are on the floor, very casual. With our dogs, Chuck and Weeza.
We're having some floor time.
They wanted to be part of the interview this time. Michelle's going to ask the first question.
Sure. So how long have you been a vet?
Yeah, so I've been a veterinarian now for 10 years. I started a little later in my 20s. I swore I'd never be a vet. And I was actually pursuing zoology and spent a lot of time over in Africa. I was working with primates. And then it was a chimp that broke her leg that just made me realize, okay, I don't want to work on the nonprofit side. I actually want to go into medicine. Yeah. And so went back and I was convinced I was going to be a wildlife veterinarian. And I've kind of had a circuitous path where I went and studied Eastern medicine. So I've done Chinese medicine, herbs, Tuina, acupuncture, and then did some general practice. And then realized I really love emergency medicine. And so that's what I do predominantly. And I think, honestly, a lot of people that end up in emergency medicine wanted to do wildlife. It's like the closest thing you can get to those unpredictable situations where you never know what's going to fly through the door. It's kind of an adrenaline rush.
Do you work any of those Eastern medicine practices into your animal care?
Not a lot in emergency. There's a few emergency resuscitation points that we'll use, you know, if we're doing CPR on a dog or cat or something similar. But I actually am opening a practice here in Bozeman that'll do house calls for acupuncture and more holistic integrative medicine.
All right.
Awesome. I'm actually putting a giant teepee up in my backyard this summer. So I'm going to have like an outdoor space for, you know, euthanasias, acupuncture, things like that. So I'll get to do a little bit of both, the yin and the yang.
Okay.
I had a friend who had like a 16-year-old Persian that would get acupuncture once a week. It was fun. It purred. It slapped during acupuncture. Yeah. She was like, I believe that it's keeping my cat. And I swear to God, I don't know how long that thing lived, but I remember at 16, it was still like, I'm fine. It's acupuncture.
I love the idea of a sweat lodge for pets, though, and like feeding them peyote buttons. And
yeah.
I know. It's going to get strange down there, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'll come do some crystal work.
My Labrador wants to go on a vision quest.
Exactly. It's going to be for whatever the community needs.
All right. So 10 years in the biz. Yeah. How has the field of veterinary medicine changed since you've been part of it?
Gosh, I mean, I feel like it's changed a lot. I think a really pivotal point was during COVID. So during COVID, you know, when everybody was stuck at home, just like in human healthcare, veterinary medicine got very, very busy. And I don't know if it was a combination of people adopting more pets during that time, or they were just home with their pets, so they were noticing things more commonly. But our intake of patients went up like 40% during COVID.
Wow.
And then it stayed there for several years. And it's starting to normalize a little bit, but it definitely changed the industry as we know it.
Okay. And was that a product of people getting more pets?
I think it could be. I think people were at home a lot, and then they realized.
Good God. There goes my headphone wire.
Sorry. All right. We got a camera bump. We got some headphone wires.
It's okay, Brady. Come here.
All right. You were talking about COVID pets.
I think like people had COVID babies. People had COVID pets. And then they realized, hey, I'm working from home a lot. I can actually have the pet that I've always wanted. But I think it also, you know, it's the same as, you know, emergency visits go up over holidays, weekends. It's time that people are spending at home. So they notice things about their animals.
Right.
Interesting. Okay.
Chuck's back injury happened during COVID.
Did it?
Yeah. Chuck jumped out of somebody's car. And you know how Montana cars are pretty big. He jumped from a high area to a low area and ruptured a disc in his back. So he had no movement at all. He was paralyzed and he had about a 50% chance of walking again, and he made it.
Yeah, that's something we see really commonly in dachshunds and corgis, you know, backs. Kind of the long back backed dogs.
Yeah.
He certainly did a really scary emergency.
I was wheelbarrowing him everywhere for a while there, and then
it got dark. You know, I mean, I basically had his hind legs on a rope. I mean,
we had to kind of milk him to pee. It was, dark days, right?
Chad? People have all these visions of, gosh, well, it's okay if my animal doesn't recover, I'll just put him in a wheelchair. But it really doesn't work like that. You know, dogs can't sit in a wheelchair. They can't sometimes express their bladder, or, you know, defecate. So yeah, it's a whole nother world of nursing care.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad to see he's made a full recovery.
I know. But we did discuss, we're like, even though his spine is fused now and hopefully much stronger than it was before, we have discussed if it happens again, he may have to go gentle into that good night, because we cannot. He was so miserable. He was just whining all the time, and it was so sad, and he couldn't go potty.
Well, and he's a lot older now and might not recover from that surgery, which was... It was traumatic. It was a really, you know, a delicate surgery.
Yeah.
But we just had to send him off and hope that he was well taken care of. You're working with this group now. Is it VEG or VEG?
Yeah, we're called VEG.
VEG.
Veterinary Emergency Group. And I kind of lucked out because I was at a point in my career where I was either going to change careers or that was really about it. I needed to find something else. I was getting pretty burnt out. My work-life balance was completely out of sync, out of harmony. And I found VEG, and it's this company that's trying to kind of change the culture of veterinary medicine. And it has revitalized my career and my passion for emergency medicine.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it was started by a guy out on the East Coast, and he worked in emergency and specialty care for a long time and was just thinking, gosh, some of this stuff just doesn't make sense. You know, the things that we commonly do, we put clients in rooms, we take their animals to the back. The clients are stressed. The animals are stressed. They don't know what's happening. Then we present them with this huge estimate. The owners feel a lot of anxiety. Then we send them away so we can put their animal in a cage. And so he did away with all of that. And really what it looks like is you call the phone and a doctor answers. So there's no receptionist. There's no nurses that are buffering calls. When you come in, there's no reception area. You're just in the treatment space. And so if you want a private room, you can have one. But otherwise, you're watching other people's pets get worked on. If you want to stand tableside while we're doing a procedure, great. If you want to watch surgery, great. There's even been cases where people have scrubbed into surgery with our doctors.
No way.
Really, the only thing you can't do is go into radiology.
Okay.
But you could be there with your pet the entire time. And if you want to stay the night, we put you in a room with a bed. We put their pet in there with you, just like a human hospital. And it's just totally changed the way we practice. We sit on the floor with animals.
I think that was so hard.
They're all in one room. Isn't it just chaos with the barking and the meowing and the hissing?
You'd think so. You know, and certainly there are the right patients.
Snakes.
We see snakes too. But like the anxious cats, of course, go in a room. You know, the really leash aggressive dogs, those get put into a room. But otherwise, I actually think it makes people a lot more patient, because they're seeing what else is happening. You know, they can actually watch, like if an animal codes, we're doing CPR in the middle of the room. Right. And there's places that they can step away if that makes them uncomfortable, but it makes them much more empathetic to what's going on around them. Is seeing other people dealing with the stress of their animals being sick.
Yeah, that makes sense, because the Hermosa Clinic, you could actually see kind of what was happening back there. And then when you're in the waiting room, you would see like, oh, that dog has a greater need than my dog. So who's just getting a vaccine, I'm going to wait for the dog that needs, you know, to get other stuff done and whatnot.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's so much better than being stuck in a windowless room.
Totally.
Where you're just like tapping your fingers, waiting. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, instead you can like hold your dog while we draw blood, or, you know, you can participate as much as you want.
It's the way of a veterinarian.
I like that.
Yeah, so it's really
cool. I have a question about pet insurance, because I get a lot of emails about it.
Yeah.
Do you think it's worth getting it, or does Geico just need extra money and it's not worth it?
I think it's really hard. Just like everything that's happening in the world, we're dealing with inflation. Prices are going up everywhere. You know, when I go to Costco, I'm noticing that prices are like three times what they were a few years ago. The same thing is happening in our industry. So just to order the drugs, the equipment, the medications that we need to practice, it's more expensive. And of course, wages have gone up as well. So to retain good nursing care, good receptionists, good doctors, wages have gone up to compensate with rising cost of living.
Yeah.
And so the overall expense at a veterinary clinic is much more than it used to be. And so our costs have gone up. And I think veterinary care in general is, it's hard for a lot of people to afford, and it's only getting worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think my impression is there's a few ways to handle it. Is one, you know, when you get a pet, you open up like a little savings account, and every month you know, as soon as you get your paycheck, you funnel $15, $50, $30, whatever you can into that account.
Like a health savings
account. Yeah. And just leave it there.
Yeah.
Because you know one day you're going to need it.
Yeah.
Or consider getting insurance. I have my animals insured. I think there's a little concern with long-term, like, what is that going to do to the way that we practice medicine? Is insurance going to start to intervene on the way that we practice medicine? But so far, my experience with insurance has been great. I think I was telling you about my own personal Malamute who developed a type of bone cancer. And, you know, without insurance, I wouldn't have been able to afford her treatment. We would have been talking euthanasia.
Yeah.
And instead, I was able to take her to Colorado State. She stayed there for 3 weeks. She had PET scans. She had chemo. She had stereotactic radiation. And then I brought her back. She had a great 6 months probably before she broke her leg and went into a surgeon here in town and had a hemipelvectomy where they took her leg and half of her pelvis. And she recovered great from that. Had another great like 6 to 8 months.
Oh, my God.
And then eventually I decided to put her down.
Yeah.
But I think her care was like $24,000. And with insurance, I paid like a tiny fraction of that.
Yeah.
And so even being in the veterinary field, that is the best thing for me.
Okay.
And then there's other things like, you know, care credit, scratch pay, which are like no interest credit cards that have like no interest for 18 months.
Yeah.
There's another organization called POP. PAWP, where you pay like $15 a month and it insures all the animals in your home for up to $3,000 a year in emergency care. And so it's not pet specific, but it's also a type of insurance. Yeah, so there's options.
The background noise.
What was she eating?
Was a water gun. Boys wet up there.
Yeah.
Well, I can take that out later if needed.
Thank you. Yeah. I know. Yeah, my first. Yeah, is it Chowder? I shouldn't be saying this, but yeah, my first dog was a Corgi as well. I got him in Red Lodge, and I'd had him a week, and I was still. I wasn't making much money. I was in my early 20s. He swallowed. It was like a doll head. And so, you know, cut to me at 4 a.m. at the vet's office, just like, my dog is pooping blood. And the funniest thing is seeing a barium enema on a corgi with the doll head in there. Because first of all, corgi's intestines look bizarre in their long, weird bodies. And then just looking in, I was like, is that a doll head?
I was just about to say, I would love to see those x-rays.
It was so funny. I was like, man. But yeah, he scarfed it down and he made it. He was fine after that. But yeah, thousands of dollars later.
I bet. Yep.
Wish we had insurance then.
Totally.
So you've been practicing a lot in Montana and the surrounding areas. What are some of the common accidents that you see in this area? Yeah. What should we be on the lookout for?
So, of course, trauma is a big one. So hit by cars. We've seen dogs that have fallen into the geysers.
Oh, my gosh.
In Yellowstone.
Yeah.
So that's not a common one. No.
Okay.
But that's one of the reasons they shouldn't be in the park.
Yeah.
But we have seen it.
That looks like good drinking water.
Yeah, but a lot of hit by cars. And we do see a lot of hunting accidents.
Okay.
So we see a lot of porcupine quills. We see rattlesnake bites, things like that. A lot of other common things I see in this area. THC toxicity is one that I see commonly.
Ooh, interesting.
And that's actually a really rewarding thing to treat because people come through the door with this dog that's urinating and kind of neurologically abnormal.
Right.
And they're thinking, oh my God, my dog is dying. And when we can diagnose that it's THC ingestion, there's ways to manage it. And the dog's most of the time is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
But that's something we see commonly.
And those are the symptoms? It's...
Yeah, so what we see with that is...
Little sleepy, wants to watch The Simpsons.
Oh, you watched the video of Martha's dog. She thought it was having a seizure because it was doing this.
Like a head bobbing.
Yes.
Yeah, they kind of get hyper-reactive. So they're like really sedate. They've got the half eyelids. Their head starts to fall. And then if they get stimulated, they're like, whoa, what's happening?
Yes.
And then they're often urinating. And when they walk, they kind of stumble.
Yeah, it was drunk walking around the house doing a head bob, and I sent her a video. She sent me that video, and then I put it to music, like some reggae, and sent it back to her, easy skanking. I put it. She was like, thanks, Michelle. Now I know he's fine. It's fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's also a really difficult call to make to parents of college kids.
Yeah.
You know, that are paying the bill, and they're like, why is my son's dog in the vet hospital? And I'm like, well...
Yeah.
You know, it's culturally more acceptable than it used to be, but some parents aren't thrilled.
You're getting somebody in trouble when you make that phone call.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yep. Or the teenager who's hiding it in his bedroom.
Oh my God. Yep. This is my irreverent question. Have you had to decide against euthanizing a dog when the owner shouldn't have? Like, has an owner been like, I want to euthanize my dog? And you've had to say, you don't need to in this situation.
Yeah.
Has that been something?
Yeah. So, you know, ever since I began practicing medicine, I had a great mentor early on. And he said, you know, for longevity in this field, the most important thing is you need to be able to sleep at night. And so if you need to turn away a euthanasia, do it.
Got it.
And unfortunately, that does mean that they will probably go down the street and find somebody else. Yeah. But I have to protect my ethical code of conduct. But I do think that as I've become more experienced and the more I've seen and the older I've gotten, there are certainly times where, yes, an animal may have a treatable condition, but for that family, it still might be the best choice.
Okay.
And, you know, I had a cat come in, a male cat that had a urethral obstruction, which is obviously an emergency. He can't urinate. His bladder was
full.
Sounds
bad. Sounds uncomfortable.
Yeah. And it's one of the most critical emergencies we see. And it requires frequently days in the hospital, sometimes 3-4 days. And he was so far along in the process that his electrolyte abnormalities were really severe.
Right.
And he was non-responsive. And this woman comes in this broke down car. She's a single mom. She's got 3 kids. You know, she just lost her job. And that was one of those situations where, yes, could I have treated that animal? Absolutely. But... you know, is it a good idea to put this woman into $4,000 to $5,000 worth of credit card debt if she even has the capacity to do that?
Right.
Right.
Or, you know, and that's a tough thing about our field is they don't teach you this in school, but really we get to play financial advisor. We get to play counselor.
Life coach, exactly.
And so, yeah, there's definitely circumstances where I've turned away a euthanasia or tried to give people other options.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like if that cat had been cuter, you would have saved it no matter what.
Yeah.
That's a little known lab secret, though, is that I'm not a cat person.
Oh.
And I mean, I'm terribly allergic, but still. So I treat cats. They're wonderful, but.
Yes. Yeah. I have not been a cat person either. Yeah. I don't know what it is. And cats love me. I'm not. Whenever I go to somebody's house, they're like, "Can I get in your lap?" And, I'm not allergic, but Joe and Wallace really, really
are. You're like a hairless cat.
I want a hairless cat.
Which,
they're not really
funny enough, is they're actually the more allergy-inducing than regular cats.
Are they really?
Yeah, plus they leave little butt prints all over your house.
I'm so glad I know that.
Glad we don't have one.
Yeah, you were campaigning for one.
Someone talked me out of the campaign.
So glad I shut you
down. I just liked how ugly they were. I just wanted... And that's why I liked so Corgis. Corgis initially, when I first got one in whatever, the 90s, late 90s, nobody knew what they were because social media hadn't taken advantage. And people were just like, what is that?
Yeah.
That is that. Like, and I would say he looks like an Island of Dr. Moreau dog, like, because it's all these weird parts thrown together.
Yep.
But then now people are like, can I take a picture of your corgi with, you know, my child?
They blew up in Asia.
They blew up. So I love an ugly animal.
People can't get enough of them.
Yeah.
My daughter is convinced that her favorite breeds are Husky, German Shepherd, Corgi, and Dachshund. And like, all I can hear is the veterinarian in my brain, like behavior issues, drama queen, back problems, allergies.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You want to avoid that at all costs.
You're ruined as a dog owner.
Totally.
Prospective dog owner. All right. The cat euthanasia story got a little dark. Why don't you save us, bring us back up to a bright place. Give us a heartwarming story about saving a pet or healing a pet or something.
You know, I think some of the best stories that I've seen are not so much what happens with the dog or the cat. You know, when they recover, of course, it's wonderful. But it's watching what happens with the people that I think is the most inspiring. Kind of the reminders of how soft and wonderful humanity can be. And I've mostly seen it at Veg with that open concept is that owners will empathize with each other. We had a case recently. It was a colleague of mine that the dog was shot, and the owner of the dog was also shot.
Oh my God!
Whoa. And the person didn't make it, but the dog did.
Whoa!
But watching the community in the ER kind of come around that person and help them through the recovery process, and the dog ended up being fine. But watching people be there for each other. Another story a colleague shared with me was just recently, just a few weeks ago, she had an animal that didn't make it, that had to be euthanized. And that woman ended up staying in the ER to watch another guy see his dog through surgery.
Wow.
And the guy was so upset watching the surgery and wondering if his dog was going to make it. And she just said, you know, can I stay here with you? And they did, and they formed this tight friendship, and they stayed together.
Like a support group.
Absolutely.
How cool.
And so it's really, I've had people pay for other people's services, you know, when you know they're tight on money. It's just really nice to see, like, what people will do for one another.
Yeah. They ever have a meet cute, like a couple form because they have their animals.
I don't know, but I would love to know that. I would love to know that. I have seen some breakups with her.
All right.
You know, every veterinarian has that story of a gastrointestinal surgery where they pull a pair of underwear out of the intestinal tract and it's not from anyone in the household.
Outside underwear.
Yeah. I think another heartwarming story, which kind of starts with a dark story, but it was an animal here in the valley that was accidentally drugged behind a car around the 4th of July.
Oh, man.
But what happened is the whole community kind of rallied around this dog. His name is Marley, and he was in and out of surgery for, gosh, I want to say 8 months to a year. He's probably still had some revisions.
Yeah.
But this dog never lost his spirit. You'd go to his kennel, and he'd been in the hospital for weeks and months, and he's wagging his tail, and he's happy to see you. And he just had this wonderful spirit about him. And, you know, surgeons donated their time, you know, we helped donate, you know, his emergency stay. Everybody kind of rallied around this dog. And then he was adopted out to someone in the community. You know, community members raised money for him.
What a little trooper.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Buddy.
Yeah.
Ah, good for Marley.
Yes.
I like it.
So people are becoming, I don't know, maybe it's social media. weirdly attached to their jobs. I mean, maybe, you know, it's they're replacing children with pets and things like that, which is totally understandable. I'm kidding.
I like that you say that as your dog gnaws on your wrist.
And Chuck has, he has a licking addiction and we're working on it. Yeah, people are wondering why I like keep getting mad at him. He'll keep licking. He'll keep licking until people have new skin left.
Overloves.
He's an overlover. He always has been. But have people been coming in with like weirder ailments or, you know, things where they're just like, I don't know, I feel like they're not breathing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, kind of during my time of burnout, it's easy to answer the phone and be like, yeah, the ear infection at 4 a.m. is probably not a big deal. Oh, or, you know, yeah, like some, the broken toenail probably doesn't need to be seen at the ER.
Yeah.
But what I've found is that people are so connected with their pets now. These are children to a lot of people.
Yeah.
That, you know, if it's an emergency to them, it's an emergency to me.
Yeah.
And I would rather have them come in and me say, gosh, you know, this is a broken toenail. I can fix this in 30 seconds. This is an ear infection. Here's your medication. Because then that, you know, establishes that level of trust where they know, gosh, when something really does go wrong,
you'll be there.
I know where
you
to
know
go.
What to do. Yeah. Right.
And I would rather have them come in for the little things than, you know, the Pomeranian that's been in congestive heart failure for 6 months and then he comes in and he's purple and can hardly breathe. Oh, and then we're talking like really intense care.
Right.
And also maybe you check the toenail and you find something else that's really wrong.
Absolutely.
And catch it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Which is always a good thing.
Yeah. Like the limping dog that's not painful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Which, you know, if they're limping, they obviously are.
Something's going on there.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, you're scanning the abdomen of an otherwise healthy dog and you find a mass on the spleen, you know, which can be cancerous.
Yes. That's how my first corgi went. Yeah. Had spleen cancer. But it was hard for them to find.
Yeah, it can
showed
be.
Showed up late in life.
All right. Quickly, any breeds of dog or cat, I guess, that you would discourage people from getting, you know, other than corgis and their elongated spine?
I had an advisor once that said, you know, her favorite breeds of dogs were like Obama. And I kind of looked at her quizzically and she said, oh, because of hybrid vigor.
Okay.
And I mean, that's a terrible joke, but really, you know, the mixed breeds tend to be the healthiest breeds.
Okay.
They've got the most genetic diversity and therefore tend to be the healthiest.
The purebreds tend to have the same kind of chronic issues.
Yeah, they certainly can. You know, like golden retrievers, you know, God love them. They're amazing dogs, but they do have a much higher risk of cancer than other dogs.
Do they really?
They do. Yeah. You know, animals like border collies, they need a job. So they need to be busy. And, you know, when you see a young college student that has adopted a border collie and lives in an apartment and works two jobs, like that's probably not the greatest fit.
Yeah, that apartment's going to get destroyed. Or the dog may hurt itself doing things inside that it should be doing outside.
Yeah, I mean, I think every breed has its own pros and cons. But yeah, it's looking at the appropriate breed for your lifestyle. But really, there's so many mutts that are available for adoption that will make fantastic dogs. All of my best dogs have been mutts.
All right.
You had only been bred with some other thing, you wouldn't have had a back injury.
Yeah, don't
He's
tell
perfect.
Our designer
perfect.
Medium Bernadoodle here that.
I can't her sneaky kisses.
So we're going to do a quick quiz with Dr. Jenny. This is VetMD, so it's like WebMD. It's not a real website, I don't think. But these are actual issues. I want you to troubleshoot, diagnose on the fly. All right, we're going to start with one that's totally made up. My 16-month-old medium Bernedoodle won't stop stealing my wife's favorite slipper socks and taking them to the backyard to destroy them. What's going on here?
Gosh, you know, it's hard to say why he's doing it, but I would say that he's probably a little bored, and he probably, I love exercise therapy.
Yeah.
So, you know, we might be dealing with some anxiety there. We might be dealing with just some behavioral issues of puppyhood. But gosh, you know, if he can get a lot more exercise or go to daycare or go for some extra hikes, I bet he's going to be less inclined to be.
It's usually the days where I haven't run with her.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, you know.
Oh, with her. I'm sorry.
This was a hypothetical dog.
Oh, totally.
You couldn't have possibly known which gender it was.
Yeah. And I mean, those are the times that it's like, okay, we need to start talking about crate training and things like that, because I can't tell you how many socks and slippers and things that I've pulled out of dogs' stomach and
inside the dog.
Yeah.
Luckily, she doesn't swallow.
That's good.
Stuff. No, she chews it up and leaves
it. She takes it to her crazy pile.
All right. You read the next one, Michelle. It's on the back of your
question. Fine. Okay. Cat makes crackling.
No, this one.
Oh, my dog is acting very odd. Yeah. I have a 5-year-old pit bull. Sorry, this is hard to do with the dog.
Like a cat or dog.
He's a very sweet dog and usually very attention seeking and full of energy. Me and my fiance have had COVID the past few days. This is long.
Yeah,
too long.
You have to read it fast.
I'm over it. Okay, past few days and around the same time, my dog has been acting very odd. He would sometimes just start shivering, acting scared, does not want to go outside, somewhat lethargic, wouldn't eat his food until we put it right in front of him where he normally will run to his food bowl when he hears the bag. Physically, everything seems fine. I checked for bites, injuries, discomfort, and moving joints around. He physically seems fine. This literally started when our COVID symptoms presented. Okay. I will not read another one that long.
Okay. I think that was the longest.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Did you get it?
What do you think?
Okay.
Gosh, I mean, I have so many questions. You know, is he vomiting? Does he have diarrhea? You know, are his gums pale?
Yeah.
You know, because this makes me think when I see a large breed dog that is all of a sudden really lethargic, it makes me wonder, gosh, you know, does he have a bleeding mass in his abdomen?
Ooh.
You know, which is something we commonly see on emergency. You know,
I don't have the luxury of asking questions here. Yeah. Just a snap diagnosis.
You know,
tell
and
me
I'm
what's
not,
wrong with
you. You know, I haven't listened to the dog, so I don't know if he's got a respiratory illness. And I'm not sure what the latest, you know, dogs do have their own version of COVID. And I know that there was some concern of like the crossover and contagious nature of COVID. And,
yeah.
And to be honest, I'm not sure what the latest literature says of if that's
okay.
That's a thing.
But it could be COVID.
Yeah, but gosh, you know, dogs, it's their own strain of a coronavirus.
All right. Get a COVID test and stick it up the dog's rectum, and that's the only way to know for sure. All right.
Okay.
Here's the next one. Cat makes crackly noise when purring. When my cat purrs, she often gets really intense, and there will also be occasional crackly noises. She doesn't seem to have any signs of asthma. Could it just be that she gets really into the purrs and it comes out really loud? The vet said maybe she's even trying to swallow while she purrs, and it sounds odd.
Hmm.
What's going on there?
Gosh, these are really strange questions.
Where did you get these?
Doesn't matter.
I think that cat needs some chest x-rays and potentially an echocardiogram.
Oh, wow.
You know, because I always have to worry about heart disease in cats, you know, or does she have like, you know, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy or something like that? Is this cardiac related? Does she have pneumonia? You know, is this an upper respiratory virus?
I'm trying to shake it. Maybe turn it upside down, pop it a couple times.
Yeah, it usually works.
It totally works.
Yeah,
totally maybe
works.
It's got some Pop Rocks in its mouth. It's just been eating Pop Rocks.
Also
the house
possible.
Every day. Yeah.
That's probably just the decrepit teeth that are falling out.
Exactly. Sugar, no good.
Crackly cat.
Tell that to Chuck, who like pulls random stuff out of bushes to eat. Okay, so my dog ate a whole bowl of stir fry. Was meaning to throw it out and left it on the counter in my apartment for 20 minutes. So far, he seems fine, no vomiting or diarrhea, but it had a lot of soy sauce, garlic, and onions in the mix.
Yeah, so unfortunately, you know, garlic and onions can be toxic to dogs. Yeah.
Both garlic and onions.
Yeah, so I'd say onions more predominantly, but I would say come in, we need to induce vomiting.
Okay.
And then I would probably check some baseline lab work. And, you know, for pets that get into anything, call your ER, but then also call Pet Poison Hotline or the ASPCA Poison Control and do it as you're on the way to the hospital. And what they do is they start a case number that we can then call and talk to a board certified toxicologist, because of course, every dog is different, right? They're different breeds, different sizes, different ages, and also proprietary information of certain things are only released to the poison, the toxicologist.
Okay.
And so obviously onions is not one of those. But if you're like, my animal ate this certain type of vitamin that had these ingredients, they can actually look at all of the ingredients and decide what is the toxic threshold for your dog.
Oh.
And then they'll come up with a treatment plan. And then when I call in, they're like, oh, okay. So for Fluffy, you need to do A, B, C, D, and E, monitor these parameters. This is the duration of treatment.
Give it charcoal. maybe.
Sometimes, yeah.
When Chuck ate a bunch of dark chocolate M&Ms, that's he pooped black.
Yeah, let's run through it real quick. Garlic, onions, chocolate, raisins, grapes. Those are the ones I know about. Yeah. What else?
I mean, I think chocolate is the one that's oversold a lot. Chocolate, of course, is toxic, but, you know, when they get into milk chocolate and they're a large dog, I'm less concerned than, like, a small dog that gets into, like, baking cocoa, you know, like a chocolate baking powder. And grapes and raisins always should come in.
Okay.
Those are scary ones because the toxic threshold is not really well understood. So we definitely need to see your dog.
We used to feed, and now I'm like, is that why he got spleen cancer? When our dog was our first corgi, we used to give him grapes every once in a while. We're just like, here, when we were eating grapes, we're like, oh, you want a grape too? And he'd eat it. And then it was like a year or so after, we're like, oh, they're toxic.
Yeah. But the worst case would be chocolate covered raisin weed edible.
Totally. Right? Yeah, that's like the trifecta.
Instant death.
Yeah.
I'd be like, coal pit poison. I'm going to do some research on the way.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know what to do.
I'm going to start shopping for a casket here. All right. Okay. Continuing with my animal ate my Asian dinner. Is it okay to feed my cat sashimi for her last meal?
I don't have to read the whole thing that goes underneath it. It's too much.
I have a 20-year-old calico cat, and I just found out she has kidney disease, heart disease, insanely high blood pressure, and a couple of strokes. Not a lot of time left. Can I give her sashimi for her last meal, or will it hurt
her? I'm not a vet, but I'd say yes.
Yeah, so I call that the steak and potatoes phase of life. You know, whether it's a dog or a cat, when you reach a threshold where we're just trying to get food in them or we're trying to celebrate them in their final moments, my goodness, let them eat whatever they want. If they want a cheeseburger on the way to my teepee to be euthanized, let's do it.
Right? I think so.
So whatever they need.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I'll eat a cheeseburger.
I think the biggest thing
euthanized in my teepee.
The biggest thing to consider with all of these like eating, you know, things that they shouldn't is, you know, common gastritis or pancreatitis, so inflammation of the stomach, the pancreas, those are really common sequela. And so we'll then see vomiting, diarrhea. Sometimes dogs need to be hospitalized after things like that. So, you know, feed them what you will, knowing the common toxins. Those are available online, of course. And then, you know, just know that you might be doing some house cleanup.
And at the end, go nuts.
Yeah,
and at the end,
feed them weed.
Ice cream. Yeah.
A little weed in their ice cream.
I don't know that I can endorse that.
I will say I've seen CBD for dogs.
Sure.
So I gave that to Chuck once on a plane, and weren't you chill? You were the chillest, and he's not a chill dog.
Yeah.
As you can see, he doesn't understand rest.
What's interesting about CBD is there is more cannabinoid receptors in the body than any other type of receptors combined. And so I do think that there is a possibility that, you know, CBD could be used for a lot of things. We just don't have a way to like isolate it to like, hey, we want you to target inflammation. We want you to target anxiety. But I hear a lot of people say that it helps.
So. It worked for his anxiety because he does, as you can tell, have just a touch of it.
Just a touch.
Yeah. And that's
intense.
Right. He never knows, even at 9 and a half, almost 10, he doesn't know how to be just chill. We're working on it still. It's a behavioral thing.
There's one more, I want you to read it, Michelle.
Should I lie about the name of my grandmother's cat when taking it to the vet? My grandmother recently got a new cat, a giant fluffy orange Persian that she insists on calling Fat, P-U-S-S-Y. I've tried to explain why this is an odd name or that some people might find it offensive. But when I get too specific, she'll say something like, that's gross. Don't talk like that, and change the subject. She even got a tag with a name on it. I'm driving the cat to the vet's office next week, and I'm hoping I can reason with her by then. But anyway, so yeah, I just don't want to offend anyone.
I would say those of us in veterinary medicine could use a little bit more brevity. Right? We could use a little bit more comedy. So something like that would make me laugh hysterically.
You would appreciate
them
being honest about the name in that situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, of course, we don't have HIPAA and things like that in animal medicine, but I would get a very good laugh out of that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, thank you.
I love that old lady.
I know. That's pretty good.
Totally.
All right. That was VetMD. Thank you.
Those were tough.
Dr. Jenny Ladd, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Minutes.
Like, I have so many questions.
I do too.
There's a reason that website doesn't exist. Where did they come from? I got it from a subreddit called AskVet.
Yeah.
So these are real people, real questions. Mm-hmm.
And actual vets will answer those.
You think the fat pussy one was made up, or do you think somebody actually asked that?
I love it. I want to believe that it's real.
I do too.
Whether or not.
I mean, I've seen a lot of strange things.
Yeah.
So I would believe it.
Yeah. Thank you for sitting on the floor with us and getting covered in dog fur.
Yes.
This has been great, and I've learned a lot, and hopefully our viewers and listeners will as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. It's
hopefully you won't be seeing these guys for an emergency anytime soon.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we roll the credits, what's wrong with Chuck's eye? He just keeps getting this brown goo that comes out of it. Sometimes it comes out of both. Does he have allergies?
So potentially it could be a little conjunctivitis.
Like, subscribe, rate, and review. The number of stars you give us, well, that's up to you, but do five, please. Share this with family members and share it with peers. Share it with any human being who has ears. Or do nothing. It won't do any harm, but why not throw a bone to the hoary marmot?
Offer this episode.
Is this helpful? What in the world? What's going on with you?
There were two F's in offer, and they snuck over to episode. And so I said episode.
You said episode. I didn't even catch it.
I said offer this episode because there are too many F's in offer. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
Don't even offer me another F. That's too much. You keep your F's to yourself.